Welcome to the Construction Technology News of the Week with Artem Kuchikov and Tanis Livinian. From groundbreaking innovations to industry-shaking updates, this is your Construction Technology News of the Week. Join us with our guest of the week as we dig into the latest news shaping the future of construction. All right, Tanis, what do you got for us this week?
I always come with something related to women in industry because I'm a big advocate of more women pursuing careers in construction because it's the best industry in the world. We love it. We've got a lot of excitement for it. So I found an article that I thought was quite interesting and very relevant to a discussion around robotics. So it's an MSN article, using tech and AI to make construction jobs appeal to women. So as everybody knows, women are underrepresented in the trades. Women are also underrepresented in, frankly, every other role in the industry, albeit the representation is higher in roles such as project controls and planning and things like that. So we need more women in the industry. There's a labor shortage. And this particular company, based in Berlin, I think it's LAT, L-A-T. I'm not sure. So if I'm mispronouncing it or calling it the wrong thing, I apologize. But the company's awesome. Two sisters took it over after their father's unexpected death. And one of the sisters happened to be pregnant at the time. There was a lot of administrative burden, and they really focused on automation wherever possible so that they could work remotely. They could do things electronically, and they really took about going digital with this organization. They lay cable next to railway tracks, like high voltage cable, and they have a robot dog, which is always very exciting. But what I found more interesting was just the focus on automation in general. One of the reasons that women are underrepresented in the industry is because hours are traditionally not conducive to childcare, which women disproportionately take on a higher responsibility for. So when your construction site activities start at 6 a.m., it's very difficult for women to find childcare at, 5 o'clock in the morning so they can be on site at six. And one of the focuses of this company is using technology to provide not only less manual labor requirements, but also more flexible working environments so that women who have other responsibilities, be it childcare or, any sort of concern with the manual aspect of the job, can use technology to make that job more efficient, less manually cumbersome, and more conducive to their personal life so they can have that work-life balance. And I think that's really important. And it's not just for women in construction. I also think about students. We have a labor shortage in the industry, yet a lot of teams haven't really spent a lot of time analyzing how they can use technology to create more flexible work environments, whether that's remote work, using robotics or autonomous devices, or whether that's purely just adjusting the schedule and looking more, as Artem and his team focus on, the logistics of the industry, right? Moving things around, making sure that we can have people that are working not traditional shifts, not 6 to 6 or not 6 to 5, providing that flexibility. So I thought this was really exciting. Obviously women in construction, we need more of that, but focusing on the use of technology to bring a more diverse workforce in and help address our labor shortage, which is something we're all very passionate about doing.
Are you trying to reach the innovators and decision makers in construction technology? Then look no further than sponsoring the ConTech Crew. That's right, we're taking new advertisers. Email us at advertising@theconTechCrew.com to learn more.
Yeah, I mean, it's a powerful need on all levels, right? We need to make the entire industry more accessible to different people to grow, right? We're currently limited in who we can recruit based on the needs of the environment. So you can continue to try, or you can change the environment. And I think changing the environment and changing the way we approach it, using technology to aid us where we can. I mean, we've seen this. It's interesting. Down further, they talk a little bit about Bianca Weber-Lawrence and talking about digitization, but she came from a masonry background. And one of my earliest robots it's not really a robot, but we got to call it a robot, right? Because it's not cool if it's not a robot, but it's really just a lift, is the mule, right? It lifts CMU and moves it. and takes the strain off of the person. Well, that now means that lots of people can be able to lift and install and work in masonry. We're not going to get you to not be outside in a lot of ways. But like you said, an interesting one that I just thought of while you were talking about it is, you know, the work hours that are non-conducive to family. We do that because we try to spray as many people as we can, as much as we can, because we're unpredictable, right? And we're trying to go, go, go and push, push, push and get more done. And what do? When you make people busier. What if we just knew exactly what it took? Exactly how long? You know, for Artem's use case, it's like, listen, that equipment has to be down. As long as it's not an emergency critical, like it failed, it's got to be maintained. Well, it can be maintained as long as you can schedule and predict how long it needs to be down, when it needs to be down, and you can actually adjust the schedule to your workforce, right? We can't keep working people 12 hours a day, et cetera, because by the way, they also get less productive. We've proven that out with time too. So there's a number of uses for the technology in general to make it more accessible to more people, but also make the work hours and the work stress, you know, less. We don't have time for paperwork. We have enough real work that we've got to do. So Artem, I'm interested because, you know, this leans towards a lot of the work you guys have done over time and your experiences.
Yeah, I have two thoughts on that. First, technology definitely democratizes access to the industry. Today, there is a notion that like more, like bigger, better, right? It's got to be the biggest crane in the world, the biggest bulldozer or excavator to get the job done, right? So it's, or like the biggest guy out there, right? But the reality is that you like work smarter, not harder. I think that should be the motto for this industry. Thought number two, labor shortage is a really big concern. And as we all know, young generations like becoming an expert or like a young professional in construction industry is not the most sexiest choice. That it is how it is. And really bringing the technology in and making it cool and accessible, definitely one of the, I think, the most promising paths for this industry to strive in the future.
Yeah, you bring up a good point too. Like if you add in that the future is computer programming as well, computer engineering, like the ability to use those engineering skills along with the tools and the robotics and the things that we're going to have available to us. You know, you said it earlier that the CEO of NVIDIA has been talking about this. I've said it a few times, is that future is when AI combines with robotics to enter the physical world in a way that makes a unique difference. That's when we can do real things. And we need to be selling that. So I like that one, Tanis. Any last thoughts on it?
We need to be thinking 5 to 10 years out in the generation that's growing up with iPads in their hands and a level of digital literacy that is better than ours, right? I consider myself fairly techie. I have a nephew who navigates tech better than I do. Like he's so fluent in it. He doesn't even have to think about the interface of the applications. It's a part of his daily life. And today we have graduates coming out of degree programs and we have high school graduates looking at entering the trades. And when they're spending their first days on a construction site and all they're seeing is pens and paper, there's nothing exciting about that. There's a level of digital expectation that these new industry entrants have. And when they don't see that, they're going to go pursue an industry where they can work smarter, not harder. And they're being provided the tools to be able to do that. But we are establishing a foundation now for 5 to 10 years out. So when we think about 10 years from now, and if we take the construction site of today and take a new industry entrance in 10 years, they would laugh at us in the amount of paper-based processes and manual processes that we still have just built into the industry. It's just how we work. So I think we need to not just be thinking about industry entrance now and the labor shortage, but how we mitigate that labor shortage long term. And if we're not making investments in technology, we're just not going to be able to do that. Technology is an expectation now. It's going to be a critical element. It's going to be a deal breaker for a lot of people coming into the industry 5 to 10 years from now.
I think you're right. What else you got for us today, Tanis?
Next one. I had put a post out on LinkedIn a while ago about some of the funding that startups were seeing starting to dry up a little bit. And that was a bit of a concern. There was a lot of discussion around that. There were large levels of funding, but the number of companies that were receiving funding had diminished. So we were speculating around what that would look like for startups going forward, especially ones that were just coming onto the market with some really new and innovative ideas. Next article from Construction Dive, 6 context startups taken combined $194 million. So we are seeing investment in the space. That is a good thing. We are seeing broader and diverse investment in the space than we've seen recently, which is interesting considering the economic climate right now. And what that tells me is, regardless of what's going on in the world, there's a need for construction technology, and people recognize that. That's not going to be significantly affected by other factors. Construction is essential. We need to build things. We need infrastructure. We need all of the buildings that we use in our day-to-day lives, and that will continue to happen. And construction technology is a critical element to that. So it's great to see the funding continuing to flow. And I think that's really important, especially for the smaller startups that are just getting footing right now. We need those ideas. We need that innovation. And as we all know, developing technology does not come without financial requirements. And it's great to see companies making those investments and allowing those companies some room to explore and grow and find their footing, because as an industry, we all need that.
We need a little bit of that. And I loved it when you brought it up, because as I was scrolling through it, I'm like, wait, we got build ops at $127 million. So that was the lion's share. By the way, we've got another unicorn in the industry. If at last count, I think that's 3, right? We've got Procore, we've got Open Space, and we've got Build Ops. I think Open Space quite made it there. Maybe wrong, but they were pretty close at least. I think it was a $998 million. I was like, why can't you just give them the other 2? Stratus, which I think is a real huge kind of canary in the coal mine around the future of offsite fabrication and the growth of the trade sectors. I mean, the trades themselves are the places where work gets done. It's one of the biggest bottleneck areas, and automating and making the equipment in our fabrication shops, whether you truly believe that we're going to go more and more fully offsite, I think there's some really interesting ideas there on how that will materialize, but it's still going to need to be automated and run through the model. So Stratus, which also Larkspur, Colorado based. So I love those Colorado-based companies, and y'all know, if you've seen me around, you've seen some of my Stratus gear. It's the best swag in the business, so it's an awesome group seeing what they're doing. Lumber, who we just had on last week, took their $15.5 million. Augmenta just took $10 million, which we had on the show recently. The only 2 we have in is Kaya AI and Triad, and I think this is interesting because it leans towards what Artem does. Kaya is about supply chain intelligence, so we're seeing a lot of about that supply chain intelligence. But what I think is interesting is Triad and Lumber are both working on one of what I would call the least flashy areas that we just talked about, which is onboarding and payroll and HR and that sort of people management piece that gets lost in our business. If they come on the site, Tanis, and they're seeing paperwork, that's one thing. But if their first experience in onboarding is like filling out forms in triplicate, you're already setting yourself up for trouble, right? Like every one of them expects this little thing right here to do those things for them and for it to be seamless. I expect to pull it up, do a few things, and have that continually go through the process for me and not have to be duplicate entering my own stuff. And I think that's a huge need in our industry too, is that, you know, as Artem found, you know, vertical was where he wanted to automate, but horizontal in our industry from a career perspective, we're not going as vertical as we used to. We're going more horizontal, and we've got to be able to have as industry visibility over those people and help guide them to the next role, the next thing they might want to do. And we're not going to be able to do that without true solid people management and onboarding, especially because, look, you can't get them to the site till you've onboarded them and you've got their certifications and your compliance ready. So That's another piece of this. So I think it's just cool where that money's going and what it's indicating to me for the future. So Artem, I'm interested. You know, you see some of this, you're in that space right now yourself. So what's it kind of telling you?
Yeah, it's like the environment is definitely challenging for the fundraising or financing rounds. It's still possible to raise, but you got to be very good. That's kind of been the mantra for the past like 2-3 years. And what investors really spend more time with right now is really making sure that you have real traction, that you have signs or you have hit the product market fit. And obviously the bar is different for repeat founders, right? So that's something that, like, you know, if you have the name and if you already done it once, you'll get definitely much more trust. But for any new founders, it's a matter of validating yourself. I mean, to myself personally, the way like my understanding evolved, as a startup founder, you early on get on this track of, okay, I need to like survive from one round to the other, right? And you know, I'm raising the money in order to hit certain milestones to get certain things done so I can raise more money. But in this type of like environment, it's actually much more, like much better to actually kind of disconnect yourself a bit from this thinking and rather go in and think, okay, how do I actually build a real business? Because surprise, it actually helps you to also much easier to fundraise money because you do get the revenue from your customers and you do get the, you know, validation from the market. And then like when you don't actually need those investors, that's where actual investors want to invest in you.
Yeah, it's an interesting philosophy because I was actually talking to a couple of VCs over time and like I had this understanding at one point. It's just like, you know, you want to grow. And, you know, when you go for that round, it's how I'm going to burn it. And I had an investor turn to me and say, you know, like, those are not the people we're looking for. What we're looking for is the companies that can't take a risk because they don't have the capital to take that risk to do something and try it. And so we don't want you to tell us how you're going to burn it. We want you to tell us what risks you're not taking, what money you've got now, and where you think that risk is going to drive more profit. And then that's how a profitable VC-funded business grows. And I think you're starting to see the natural world change that a little bit, unless you put AI in front of your name. And then, well, we're still in a little bit of a crazy, crazy time. You know, it's like, okay, you know, it is what it is. But in the reality, it has to do something impactful. It has to solve a real problem and drive something back. So I thought that was an interesting one, Tanis. And I'm going to jump to mine because I think it connects both the one we just talked about and your first one. Is DoorDash rings up a record fourth quarter revenue and expands delivery reach through acquisition. So if you guys aren't familiar with DoorDash, DoorDash is an ordering service. You can order all sorts of things off of DoorDash right to your door. And I'll be honest, I was reticent in the beginning. You know, there was this philosophy that like picking out your own groceries is sort of attached to our DNA and we want to hold our fruit. We want to hold our vegetables. We want to look at them. And yes, that's aging me and I'm being honest about my own reticence. But over time, it's just become a part of the world and it's really seen an uptick. And to your point, Tanis, like when we talk to that future, these are the current expectations that as they've gone through, you know, their lives, they expect to be able to order things through DoorDash. They expect Instacart to work. They expect these kinds of things. And it was funny, I was just on a vacation and I was in Italy and I saw all the same technology and people doing the same things. In fact, I saw better technology than we're using here, I will be honest. Like efficiencies in a grocery store in Italy was amazing. Some of the silly little things that they did, like having all of your carts. You can't get a cart without a euro. You put the euro in and it unlocks the chain. The euro sticks in it. You can go through, do all your things. You cannot get your euro back, which might not seem like a lot, but it's a euro until you actually put it back in the cage, click the thing in and the euro drops in your hand. And I was like, wait a minute, you just made an efficiency. They don't now need extra people to go find all the carts like we do here in the US. Like, oh, wait, they drove an efficiency with a little thing. And also on a little going downhill on a, and it's not an escalator, it's like a people mover, but it goes downstairs. downward. And I was like, oh, this is going to be really scary where the cart, like a full cart, is going to take it. Hit it, magnetic, stopped it, just held it. It kept me safe and it safe all the way down till we went. It was efficiently moving everywhere. Efficiency, efficiency, efficiency. But you apply that to the brain and the people and the current process and their expectations. And that's where I think bringing this stuff together is going to be really, really unique in that that's the expectation. But how do we as an industry, Tanis, open up and allow ourselves to be vulnerable and discover where our DoorDash world is, where our materials, they're going to want a material and they're going to want to be able to go here and grab it, right? And say, have it delivered. And I want it delivered. You know, you don't go to DoorDash and say like, yeah, I want it in 2 weeks. I want it now. So I'm interested, Tanis, in how this connects and the growth in those sectors and the surprising adoption might lead to what we can learn.
We have come to expect a consumer-like experience. I have mentioned before, I live outside of a major city center, so I shop on Amazon. We don't have DoorDash where I live, but I love DoorDash and Skip the Dishes and Uber Eats. When I do travel a lot. So when I am in big city centers, fantastic, right? I don't have to worry about where the closest good restaurant is. I get in super late. I can put an order in for something. It's delivered quickly. Life is good. We come to expect that in our day-to-day lives. It's a convenience and an enabler that makes our lives easier. Now, can you imagine if you ordered DoorDash and you had to fill out a form and walk it down and hand it over to somebody who then handed over to somebody else who then took it and entered it in an Excel spreadsheet and emailed it over to a restaurant who then made your... nobody would use it, right? We would be like, this is the most ridiculous thing in the world. Yet that's how construction projects operate. It's a lot of forms. It's a lot of Excel spreadsheets. It's a lot of information moving around. And when we think about the logistics of it, because essentially a big part of our industry is logistics. It's moving things from one location to another at the right time. And that last mile component of that is such a critical piece, because we don't want a bunch of material laying around that nobody's using, but we also need to make sure it gets to the people who need it when they need it so that they can be productive and efficient. I think there's a lot of opportunity in our space for the DoorDash-esque type applications, and really focusing on the needs of the end user, right? That consumer-like experience, not necessarily to have food delivered, but to have tools delivered, to have material where you need it, when you need it, in 30 minutes or an hour, not 2 weeks from now. I think teams that are focusing on that are going to find a lot of product market fit because the expectation for that is already there from individuals who are using those applications in their personal lives. Now, I also saw that with DoorDash, you can finance your burrito. I'm still trying to wrap my head around that. They've partnered with Klarna. So you can finance your food deliveries and buy now, pay later, which sounds good unless you're eating a lot of burritos, I guess. You can rack up a lot of burrito debt. So maybe, I'm not sure if we should do that in construction. That might not be the best approach.
Maybe not the best approach, but it's not like it's uncommon to us. But you bring up an interesting point there too, around that we're financing burritos, because we have more people today in the U.S. at least living paycheck to paycheck than we ever have before. And they're literally looking at financing burritos. And if you look at construction, I don't know a lot of construction workers that are currently needing to finance burritos, because it is lucrative, high paying, high skilled, and it's an opportunity for us to bring them here. And like you said, it's not that I want the food delivered, although, hey, listen, understanding when the food is here and going and grabbing it or having it delivered to where you are safely, great. But it is tools. It is equipment. And this is what I wanted to bring to Artem, because at the core of this is, you talked about an Amazon analogy earlier. One of the things that's interesting about Amazon is Amazon in the background is using its own data and its own technology to understand the consumption and trends in certain areas. And they're actually moving material, they're moving product closer to where they're predicting it's going to be needed based on what they currently know. That's how they achieve that one day thing. It's not just that they have it automated, it's that they've moved what they believe that area is going to need. at the basis of that was they had the ordering history and the ordering data and the location data. Well, you're basically building that, right? In these pieces is Artem's solution, Quazzo's moving at this pace. I can predict that this industrial facility is going to need this thing. I can get it closer, which then allows me to just-in-time delivery, get it where I need it. So at the basis of all this is data collection, is getting ahead of those things. So I'm interested, you know, in your take, Artem, on how this kind of stuff materializes in the future.
No, absolutely. Definitely having like physical world connected with digital world, it just creates a flywheel where both just start being dependent on each other, right? There is still like the main question is how you get the flywheel like rolling, right? So that it's generate this effects, but there is no doubt that it's a really big opportunity. It's a really lucrative opportunity out there, and it's just poised to be like solved with like robotics and AI.
All of my articles are flowing together because the one thing that's different about this, and by the way, it was they DoorDash bought Deliveroo, which Deliveroo is the European base kind of equivalent, so they're expanding internet or globally. But when I use DoorDash and when I use those tools right now, I'm having it delivered to a known entity, Tanis, right? It's the hotel that I'm staying in. It's my door, which is mapped out already. What's the problem with a construction site? Maybe not as much an industrial because they've got a little bit of a known knowledge of where things are, but things move around. We don't know where we are in space and time because it's the last mile. It's new. Inherently, it hasn't been built because it's a construction site. So it adds in a layer, which is why I brought in my last one, how location intelligence transforms construction. This is by my buddy Mark Goldman from Esri. It really talks about construction doesn't just happen in time and space. There is a location that we need to understand. And that is the one thing that BIM and VDC, I think it's the linchpin they've been missing, is not just what's happening, but where exactly is it happening and where exactly do I need these things and how exactly are materials moving around the job site, logistically understanding, because it is, like you said it, Artem, it's chaotic at times at best, right? Like a well-played crazy orchestra of things amazingly not hitting one another and not colliding or not impacting, which is only on the best laid plans. We know on most cases there's trade stacking, there's material flow issues, there's access issues, right? When you're talking about how do you get onto a job site, where is the laydown yard? These things change on a regular basis. So we have to incorporate, if we're going to do the things I just talked about, we're also going to have to incorporate understanding where people are, not just horizontally, but vertically in the buildings and in the process. So like to connect this, we're going to need location intelligence. And, you know, Esri's been doing an incredible job of really optimizing and really bringing GIS into the field operations. And it's going to help us with tracking all of those things, right? Understanding trade stacking. So having a group of people who cannot work because the work ahead of them is not done is worse than not deploying and having a schedule slip at times because you're paying double and you're not getting the work done. So I'm interested, Tanis, when you think about GIS and location awareness, how that plays into all these other things that we've talked about throughout kind of this news episode.
Location's critical. And as you mentioned, construction sites are pretty dynamic. Even in the industrial space, you know, things move around a lot. There's a lot of heavy equipment movements. You know, you look at images of a site, 14 days apart, and it can look quite different. And there's, you know, equipment, you have cranes and things like that. So when you're thinking about the logistics of material, location-based data is quite critical because you need to know where that material and that equipment is. That becomes more difficult, as we were talking about, in colder climates where you have snow, when all of a sudden you know exactly where everything is until you get 2 feet of snow and it's all covered up. And now you have no idea where your material is. That can create a whole host of issues, right? Material delays obviously cause execution delays, and there's a cascading effect there. So material positioning as well as personnel positioning. So I'm thinking about the DoorDash analogy, right? If I need a piece of material, maybe it's a pipe spool or a piece of steel, I need to combine both the position of the piece of material and the position that it needs to be installed. Those two data points need to intersect. And that level of intelligence helps us get the right things to the right people in the right places at the right times. And it's not just for material installation. It's also for individual location awareness as well. I worked on a site many, many years ago, and I didn't have a lot of appreciation for, at that time, the work of high angle rescue teams when I was working in industrial facilities. And they did this mock exercise that I got to watch, which was really interesting. And what they did is they had somebody go out on site, pick a random crew working in an area, and put in a call for a high angle rescue requirement. And it took the high angle rescue team 27 minutes to reach that crew because they didn't know where they were exactly. So they were out there looking around, you know, very large site, lots of congestion, lots going on. And it took a while for them to get all their equipment out there and pinpoint where this individual for this mock exercise was. Now, 27 minutes, if you're hanging in a harness, you know that's a problem. The blood circulation, I think it's called, and I'm going to butcher the name here, orthostatic something intolerance.
I don't know that one.
I don't know. Yeah, but the, you know, cutting off the circulation to the limbs, when you do finally rescue that individual and the circulation restarts, it can cause some major health issues and can even be fatal. So hanging in a harness for a prolonged period of time is a problem. So not just material awareness and intersecting with individuals, but also where people are from a health and safety perspective, knowing that in proximity to other locations within a facility will help rescue teams find people faster and ultimately will save lives. I think there's a lot of benefit in the technology that's helping us do that. And I know there's some people who have some concerns about like personnel tracking and things like that, but I understand that. I fully understand people's concerns with that, but I also think there's a lot of benefit to knowing where people are in a facility in the event they need to be rescued. Those teams need to be able to find them and find them quickly.
Well, it's orthostatic intolerance. Thanks, Google.
Was it? Oh, I got it right.
Orthostatic intolerance, and that is the sudden movement after being suspended can trigger orthostatic intolerance, causing dizziness, lightheadedness, fainting, and even some serious effects. But also the stagnant time, suspension trauma is a thing. I didn't know that. And again, thanks, Google, for telling us that. But your concern about understanding people and tracking people is real, but we can get rid of that. You know, it's part of the ability for good technology to do that. And it's always been about getting to people in the right time. It's not just to the crew. It's knowing exactly how many people are on that crew and how long we're going to put that first responder into harm's way. They're as critical as the people they're rescuing. So, I mean, I didn't even think of it from that perspective, but it is a huge piece. And think about this. You know, I just think about this in delivering things. Like, people are awful at like plotting out the best course, right? So if you had that steel piece that you need where you need it and the site itself, a computer model is going to tell you faster and better. Go to Augmenta, which does this with electrical right now from a design perspective. You can apply the same thing to GIS. And what's the best and most efficient way to actually get this thing there without having to get the, you know, people who are moving it all of a sudden have to try to back up because they got into a place they couldn't get the material delivered. So it's an interesting number of use cases. Artem, you got that look like you're leaning in. You got something there.
No, I just wanted to just double down on the fact that material movement and like personal, like tracking automation has a lot of potential in this industry. You know, every tool can be use either way, and we better use it to our advantage. And a lot of this can be enabled only through infrastructure, the same way as, you know, these days we see all these data centers popping up in different parts of the world because we are getting ready for the AI boom, right? It's AI is a new internet, and data center is the infrastructure that will make it happen. So solutions like this, who are essentially laying this infrastructure, letting us understand where things are and where people are on the construction side, is enabling this future.
It's awesome. I think we'll wrap it up. We put a nice little bow through all of them today. So I always love it when a plan comes together. With that, Tanis, thanks for joining me today.
Always a pleasure, Jeff. Thanks for having me on the show.
And Artem, it was a pleasure to have you on an interview. If you guys didn't hear Artem's interview, just go back to Tuesday and listen in. And thanks for joining us for the news, man. It's been fun to work to talk to you about the news today.
Yeah, great chat. Thanks for having me.
And thank you for tuning in to Geek Out for the Construction Technology News of the Week with Artem Kuchikov and Tanis Lavinia. To read all our news stories, learn more about our guests, and to listen to the show, visit thecontentcrew.com. This is The Content Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.